taking their bows, followed by Oroi, the High Priest of Baal, Gianluca Boratto. Being warmly applauded by the Opera Rara Chorus, also making its proms debut, their course master Madeline Venner. Here is Barry Banks. That's Adreno and the baddie, ostensibly. He gets away with it, or perhaps he's taken away for something nasty to happen to him. The bass, Mirko Palazzi. Daniela Barcellona, Ars Arce. If you've missed some of tonight's performance, don't forget you can listen to the next 30 days in HD sound via the BBC Proms website. Great reception for Ars Arce. No sign of Semiramide, but here she is. What a role for her, Albina Shagimuratova. Well, Semiramide was Rossini's last opera for the Italian stage, which he wrote when he was all of 30 years old. Extraordinary piece. So many forward-looking effects. Terrific sense of the drama, too. If he'd gone on till he was 80, like Verdi, who was so inspired by this opera, who knows what Rossini would have produced. But great to have the opportunity to hear this score nearly in its entirety and performed by a company who really believe in it. All the cast taking applause at the front of the stage. Kind of forgetting they've got a conductor to get on. They are moving to the side. Patiently waiting in the wings. Let's get him on before we leave you. And passing them in the bull run. What an evening for him. Real triumph. Mark Elder returning to the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment and the chorus of Opera Rara from the Royal Albert Hall. Time for me to hand you on to John Shea in Broadcasting House, who can tell you what's in store for your late night Radio 3 listening. John.
Thank you very much to Martin Handley. And just before we come to Drama on 3, a quick look ahead to tomorrow night's prom, when Daniel Barenboim and the Staatskapelle Berlin come for the first of their two concerts, pairing Mozart and Bruckner. And that's tomorrow night at the regular time, 7:30. So now at 11:03 this Sunday night, it's time for Drama on 3 and another chance to hear The Physicists by Friedrich Dürrenmatt, translated by Joel Agee and adapted for radio by Matt Thompson, with a cast led by Samantha Bond, Jeffrey Whitehead and John Hodgkinson. The play takes place in a magnificent Swiss villa, now somewhat institutional, set against the backdrop of a beautiful, calming lake and distant blue mountain ranges. The villa has been converted to a private sanatorium run by the famous psychiatrist Dr. Mathilde von Zandt for the mentally disturbed elite. But there have been disturbing incidents here at the villa. Police Inspector Richard Voss has investigated here once before, and he's about to be called out again.
Camera, Doctor?
Yes.
It's beginning again.
Inspector, Doctor. I'll take you straight to the scene, to the drawing.
Thank you, sister. You have only the three patients in this building?
The bankers and writers are housed in the new wing. We keep only physicists here.
What's that?
Responsibility for the owner of that cat.
Smoking's allowed, isn't it?
It's not customary.
Oh.
A cup of tea.
I'd prefer schnapps.
This is a sanatorium.
Then nothing. Blocker, you can take the pictures now.
Has the body been moved?
No.
What's the name of the victim?
Irena Straub.
Age?
22.
The murderer?
Please, Inspector, the poor man is ill, after all.
All right, then, the perpetrator.
Ernst Heinrich Ernesti. We call him Einstein here.
Why would you do that?
Because he believes he is Albert Einstein.
No other suspect? That is, no one else, in your opinion, could have done it?
No, I don't think so.
Strangled, would you say, Doctor?
Definitely. With the cord of the floor lamp. I've observed that madmen often possess incredible strength. There's something almost monumental about it.
You think so? I find it irresponsible to leave madmen in the care of female nurses. This is already the second murder.
Please, Inspector.
The second accident within a three-month period to have taken place in the asylum known as Les Cerisiers. Yes. On August the 12th, a certain Herbert George Beutler, who is convinced he's Isaac Newton, strangled the nurse Dorothea Moser. Also in this room. This would not have happened with male attendants.
Really? There are other people here with monumental strength, as you put it, Doctor. Dorothea Moser was a member of the League of Lady Wrestlers, and Nurse Straub was regional champion of the National Judo Association.
I see. And you?
I lift weights.
May I now see the murderer?
Please, Inspector.
I mean the perpetrator.
That's him. You hear? Playing the violin.
Then tell him to stop. I need to ask him some questions.
It can't be done.
Why not?
We can't allow that. For medical reasons.
This fellow of yours strangled a nurse.
Inspector. He is not a fellow, but a sick human being who needs to calm down. And since he thinks he is Einstein, he only calms down when he is playing his violin.
Well, it's incredible that you believe yourself to be acting logically, or am I losing my mind?
No, I'm quite sure you're not.
I'm certainly getting confused. On top of that, it's hot in here.
Not at all.
Nurse, please ask the chief psychiatrist to come here.
That's not possible either. Dr. von Zand is accompanying Einstein on the piano.
How convenient for them.
Einstein only calms down when the doctor plays the accompaniment.
And 3 months ago, Dr. von Zand had to play chess with Newton so that he could calm down.
You will have to wait.
How long will the recital persist?
A quarter of an hour, an hour? It depends.
Fine. I'm waiting. I'm waiting!
We're just about finished, Inspector.
So am I. You can remove the body.
Yes, sir.
It's all very neat.
It has a symmetry. The mathematical equation for all murders is always the same and never adds up. 1 + 1 = 1.
Doctor, come with me. I'll show you to the chapel.
Sir Isaac Newton, at your service.
And you are?
Police Inspector Richard Voss.
I'm pleased to meet you. Very pleased. Really, I am.
Mm-hmm. I heard pounding noises, groaning, gasping, gurgling, silence. Mm. And then people coming and going. May I ask what's going on?
Nurse, Irena Straub has been strangled.
Of the National Judo Association?
The regional champion.
Terrible.
We think Ernst Heinrich Ernesti did it.
The struggle must have taken a lot out of him. He's rather frail. What did he use to,
The cord of the floor lamp.
There are many ways to skin a cat.
Oh, yes? Do you think someone else could have murdered her?
Like whom? Do you think I...
We've already confirmed your alibi. No.
The boss? Good heavens, no. She's utterly harmless. Touched, perhaps, but completely safe. I can vouch for that.
So it was Einstein.
Ernesti. I'm extremely sorry for him. I'm sorry about the judo champion, too. Excuse me, please, I have some tidying up.
Be my guest. Our work is done.
I can't stand disorder. Actually, you know, I became a physicist only because of my love of order. To prove that the apparent disorder of nature is founded in a higher order. Only patients are allowed to smoke. Do you mind if I have a little snifter?
Not at all.
We hide it here, behind the fire guard. There we go. A nesty. I can't believe it. I'm really upset. How could anyone strangle a nurse?
But you yourself strangled a nurse.
Hmm.
Dorothea Moser?
Well, that's a completely different matter, Inspector. After all, I'm not crazy. Dorothea Moser. Straw-coloured hair, remarkably strong. A wrestler, supple despite her bulk. She loved me, and I loved her. A dilemma that could only be resolved by means of a curtain cord. Bottoms up, to your health.
To yours. Dilemma.
My mission was to think about gravity, not love a woman. And besides, there was an enormous difference in age.
That's true. You must be well over 200 years old.
What do you mean?
Well, Isaac Newton was born in...
Are you a little bit touched, Inspector? Or are you just pretending?
Now, look.
Do you really believe that I'm Newton?
Well, you seem to believe it.
May I tell you a secret, Inspector? In confidence?
Of course.
I am not Sir Isaac. I just pretend to be Newton.
And why?
So as not to confuse Ernesti.
I don't understand.
But unlike me, Ernesti really is deluded. He thinks he's Albert Einstein.
Well, what does that have to do with you?
Look at my ankles.
You're not wearing socks.
Exactly. If Ernesti found out that I'm actually Albert Einstein, his identity would go poof.
Are you saying...
Yes. The famous physicist, discovery of the theory of relativity. That's me.
Pleased to meet you.
Do call me Albert.
Well, you can call me Richard.
I can assure you that I would fiddle my way through the Kreutzer Sonata with a good deal more brio than he just did. The way he plays the Andante is simply barbaric, don't you think?
I don't know anything about music.
Richard, come and sit here by me.
Albert...
It bothers you, doesn't it, Richard, that you can't arrest me?
Surely you see, Albert...
Would you like to arrest me because I strangled the nurse or because I made the atomic bomb possible?
But...
When you turn that knob next to the door, what happens, Richard?
The light goes on.
You establish an electric contact. Mm. Do you know anything about electricity, Richard?
I'm not a physicist, or an electrician, for that matter.
I don't know much about it either. All I do is set up a theory based on observations of nature. I write down this theory in the language of mathematics and arrive at several formulas. That's where the engineers come in. All they're concerned with are the formulas. They treat electricity the way a pip treats a whore. They exploit it. They build machines, and a machine doesn't work until it becomes independent of the knowledge that led to its invention. So any fool nowadays can switch on a light or detonate an atomic bomb? There, there, Richard. And now you want to arrest me for that. It's not fair.
I don't want to arrest you at all, Albert.
Only because you think I'm insane. But why don't you refuse to switch on a light if you don't understand anything about electricity? You're the criminal here, Richard. But now I must put my cognac away, otherwise the head nurse will throw a fit. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Albert.
You should arrest yourself, Richard.
We're ready to leave, Inspector.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the head psychiatrist.
Oh, I remember her from the last time. Kyphosis. Fused thoracic vertebrae. Inoperable. Why, she never married. But the hump on her back didn't hold her back in her work.
Quite. She's a noted psychiatrist and humanitarian.
I checked her out. Can't have been her. Must have been Einstein.
Call myself a detective.
Pardon, sir?
There isn't anything to detect. There's nothing here. It's all a straightforward, sordid little misunderstanding between an innocent, unsuspecting nurse and a raving lunatic wrapped up in the guise of a mild-mannered physicist.
Cause and effect. Sadly, there's no room for uncertainty.
Drive back to town with the men. I'll follow later.
You're looking at a portrait of my father, Privy Councillor Auguste von Zandt. After his death, I transformed his house into a sanatorium. A great man, a true human being. I am his only child. Shall I tell you something?
Please.
He hated me like the plague. Oh, not because of the way I came out, the way I look, with this for a back. Actually, he hated everyone like the plague, and probably with good reason. As a wealthy industrialist, he saw depths of depravity that are forever hidden from our profession. We psychiatrists are still hopelessly romantic philanthropists. Everything is all right. Ernesti has calmed down. He threw himself onto his bed and went to sleep, like a happy little boy. So I can breathe freely again. I was afraid he would want to play Brahms' third sonata.
Excuse me, Dr. Van Zandt, for transgressing the no-smoking rule.
But... Oh, enjoy your cigar, Inspector. I need a cigarette myself, rather urgently. Give me a light. Oh, awful. Poor Irena. Such a clean young thing. You had a conversation with Newton?
I discovered something.
Congratulations.
In reality, Newton thinks he's Einstein as well.
That's what he tells everybody. But actually, he believes he's Newton.
Are you sure?
Inspector, I decide who my patients think they are. I know them far better than they know themselves.
But in that case, you should help us, Doctor. The government is starting to complain.
The district attorney.
Furious.
As if that were my concern, Voss.
Two murders.
Please, Inspector.
Two accidents in 3 months. You have to admit that security measures in your establishment leave something to be desired.
I am running a sanatorium, not a penal institution. Even in your line of work, Inspector, you can't lock up murderers before they've committed their crimes.
Except in this case, we're not dealing with murderers, but with madmen. And they can and do kill at any time.
So do normal people, and much more frequently. I have only to think of my grandfather, Leonidas von Zandt, the field marshal, with his great lost war. Don't we have new resources at our disposal? Drugs that can transform raving madmen into gentle lambs? Are we supposed to suspend them in nets wearing boxing gloves, the way it used to be done?
I woke up.
Come now, Professor.
Did I play well?
Beautifully, Professor.
What about Irene? Is she...
Don't give it another thought, Professor.
I'm going back to sleep.
That's good of you, Professor.
So, that was him. The one who strangled...
Ernst Heinrich Ernesti.
The murderer. The perpetrator. The one who thinks he's Einstein. When was he committed?
2 years ago.
And Newton?
1 year ago. They're both incurable. These unfortunate accidents could not have been foreseen by anyone. Medically, there is no explanation for what has happened. You or I would be just as likely to strangle a nurse. Unless... Thank you. Inspector, haven't you noticed something?
Such as?
They are both physicists. Nuclear physicists.
So?
For a policeman, you have a very unsuspecting mind.
Doctor.
Voss.
You think...
They were both experimenting with radioactive materials.
You suspect a connection?
I am merely stating the facts, that's all. Both of them go insane. The condition of both deteriorates. Both become a threat to the community. Both of them strangle nurses.
Are you saying their brains could have been affected by radioactivity? But surely they only believe they're physicists. They haven't actually...
Yes. Well... Who is to say what they have done in their moments of madness? Or, of course, they don't actually have to have handled such dangerous elements. We would never let them have radioactive material in their cells, rooms. That would be dangerous. But they might have believed they were experimenting with radiation. Newton dabbled in alchemy. Einstein turned matter into energy. It is only theoretical physics in name. Yes. The mere idea turned them into killers. Unfortunately, it is a possibility we must face.
How many patients are still here?
Three.
Only three?
The rest were moved to the new house immediately after the first accident. Fortunately, we were able to complete the building just in time.
How was the new building funded?
It is a private clinic. We have a number of rich patients. Luckily, being rich is no guarantee of sanity these days. In fact, being mad is something of a luxury.
I understand you're practically the sole heir to your family's estate.
If you know, why do you ask? I am, you might say, fortunate in having a great number of dead or infirm relatives. My family tree is so old that it is a small medical miracle that I pass for relatively normal. Mentally, that is.
And the third patient?
Also a physicist.
His name?
Johann Wilhelm Möbius.
Was he involved with radioactivity as well?
No. He prefers to play with strips of paper. His desk is littered with twisted scraps.
Could he also...
No, he's been here for 15 years. Harmless. Totally. I can vouch for him.
Dr. Van Sands, you must see reason. The district attorney categorically insists on male attendance for your physicists.
He shall have them.
I've now paid two visits to Les Cerisiers. I hope I won't have to show up here again.
Have you a light, nurse?
At a time like this?
For the candles.
Poor Irena.
At peace. Sad. Her final judo match ended in defeat.
And so healthy, too.
The wreaths?
I've already called the florist.
How is my aunt?
Restless.
I wonder if her dosage is too low. And Cousin Ulrich?
Still in the closed ward.
His kind do not respond to the talking cure. We will progress onto a physical intervention of some kind. Oh. That would be Mrs. Möbius. Dead on time.
What a pretty cat. Boys.
Good day, Mrs. Möbius.
Rose. Is Mrs. Rose now? I hope this won't be too cruel a surprise, Doctor. 3 weeks ago, I married Mr. Rose, a missionary. Oscar was a widower.
Oh, congratulations, Mrs. Rose. My sincerest congratulations. To you too, Mr. Rose. Best wishes.
You do understand why we took this step.
Oh, but of course, Mrs. Rose. Life must continue to flower.
How quiet it is here. How friendly. A truly divine peace reigns in this house. Quite as the psalmist says, for the Lord heareth the needy and despiseth not his prisoners.
Oscar is a wonderful preacher, Dr. Van Sant.
Hello, boys.
Hello, Doctor.
My boys.
What have you there?
It's just a lamp cord, Doctor. It was lying on the floor.
Thank you, young man. Marvellous boys, Mrs. Rose. You have good reason to trust in the future.
I've brought my boys with me for a reason. Oscar is taking over a mission in the Marianas. And I thought it proper that my boys should make their father's acquaintance before we leave, for the first and last time. They were still small when he fell ill, and now perhaps they will be saying goodbye forever.
Mrs. Rose, medically speaking, I may have some scruples, but as a human being, I sympathise with your wish for a normal life.
How is my sweet little Johann Wilhelm?
Oh, our dear Möbius spins a cocoon around himself, a world of his own.
Does he still claim to seek King Solomon?
Oh, yes.
A sad, lamentable delusion.
Your stern judgment surprises me a little, Mr. Rose. As a theologian, you must reckon with the possibility of a miracle.
Oh, of course, one does. But perhaps not so much in the case of a mental patient.
Does he know about the divorce?
He has been informed.
Did he understand?
He takes hardly any interest in the outside world anymore.
When I first met him, he was a 15-year-old schoolboy. He had rented an attic room in my father's house. An orphan. Miserably poor. My efforts made it possible for him to enter college and later to study physics. We got married on his 20th birthday. Against my parents' wishes. We worked day and night. He was writing his dissertation, and I took a job with a shipping company. 4 years later, we had our oldest son, Adolf Friedrich. And then there were the two other boys. Finally, there were prospects of a professorship, and we thought we could finally breathe freely. He had very good prospects, I believe. But then... Johann Wilhelm fell ill, and his sickness swallowed up huge amounts of money. Oh, my whole life has been a struggle.
Mrs. Rose, you are a courageous woman.
Doctor, up till now, I've made it possible for Johann Wilhelm to stay in your sanatorium. The fees were far beyond my means, but God always came to my aid. I'm afraid now you'll think I just married Oscar so I would no longer have to provide for Johann Wilhelm. But that's not the case. Things are even harder for me now. Oscar is bringing 6 sons into our marriage.
6?
Oscar is a passionate father, but now there are 9 children to feed.
Now, Mrs. Rose, don't cry.
I suppose my sweet little Johann Wilhelm will probably be interned in a state hospital.
No, he won't, Mrs. Rose. Our dear old Möbius will stay on here in the villa. You have my word. He's used to living here and has found some nice, dear colleagues. I am not a monster, you know.
You are so good to us, Doctor.
Not at all, Mrs. Rose. You can steam off to the Marianas with a good conscience. But now, let us bring in our dear old Möbius. Oh, these padded doors are such a pest. Möbius? Dear Möbius, you have visitors. Leave your physicist's den for a moment and come in here.
Johann Wilhelm.
Daddy! Papa!
Daddy!
My dear Möbius, I should hope you can still recognise your wife.
Lena?
There's a glimmer after all, Möbius. Yes, you're Lena.
Hello, Lena.
My sweet little Johann Wilhelm. My dear, dear little Johann Wilhelm.
Mrs. Rose, Mr. Rose, if you have anything further to discuss with me, I am at your disposal in the new wing over there.
Your boys, Johann Wilhelm.
3?
But of course, Adolf Friedrich, your eldest.
Nice to see you, Adolf Friedrich, my eldest.
Hello, Daddy.
How old are you, Adolf Friedrich?
16, Daddy.
What do you want to be?
A minister, Daddy.
I remember we were walking across the Josefplatz. I was holding your hand. The sun was very bright, and the shadows looked as if they'd been drawn with a compass. And you? You are?
My name is Wilfred Casper, Daddy.
14?
15. I want to study philosophy.
Philosophy?
An exceptionally precocious child.
I've read Schopenhauer and Nietzsche, Daddy.
Your youngest, Jörg Lucas? 14.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, Jörg Lucas, my youngest.
I want to be a physicist.
A physicist?
Yes, Daddy.
You mustn't, Jörg Lucas. Not under any circumstances. Get this out of your head. I forbid it.
But you became a physicist.
I should never have done that, Jörg Lucas. Never. I wouldn't be in a madhouse now.
But Johann Wilhelm, you're mistaken. You're in a sanatorium, not a madhouse. You had some trouble with your nerves, that's all.
No, Lena. People consider me crazy. Everyone. You too. And my boys, too. Because King Solomon appears to me.
Let me introduce Oscar Rose to you, Johann Wilhelm. My husband. He is a missionary.
Your husband? But I'm your husband.
Not anymore, my dear little Johann Wilhelm. We're divorced. Remember?
Divorced?
But you know that.
No, I don't.
Dr. von Zandt told you, definitely.
Possibly.
And so then I married Oscar. He has 6 boys. He was a minister and now has accepted a post in the Marianas.
In the Pacific Ocean?
We're sailing from Bremen the day after tomorrow. Yes, that's how it is.
I'm pleased to meet the new father of my boys.
I have taken them into my heart, Mr. Mobius, all 3 of them. God will provide. As the psalmist says, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want.
Oscar knows all the Psalms by heart. The Psalms of David, the Psalms of Solomon.
I'm glad the boys have found a responsible father. I was an inadequate father to them.
But Johann Wilhelm...
I congratulate you from the bottom of my heart.
It's time for us to leave.
For the Marianas.
To say goodbye.
Forever.
Your sons are remarkably musical, Johann Wilhelm. They show a real talent on the recorder. Play something for your daddy boys as a farewell gift. Have a seat, my dear little Johann Wilhelm.
One, two.
Tenderly.
Please don't. Please. That's enough. Please. Don't play anymore! Please. For Solomon's sake. Don't play anymore. Music! No more music! Please! 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 Please!
Mr. Mobius, King Solomon more than anyone will be gladdened by the piping of these innocent boys. Just think, Solomon, the psalmist, the singer of the Song of Songs.
Mr. Rose, I've met Solomon face to face. He is no longer the great golden king who sings of the Shulamite and of the young rose that are twins. He has cast away his purple robe.
Naked and stinking, he cowers in my room as the poor king of truth. And his psalms are terrible. Listen well, missionary. You love the psalms. You know them all. Commit these to memory as well. A Psalm of Solomon, to be sung to the cosmonauts. We high-tailed it to outer space, to the deserts of the moon, foundered in their dust. Some perished right there, without a sound. But most of us were boiled in the lead fumes of Mercury, dissolved in the oil swamps of Venus, and even on Mars we were food for the sun, thundering, radioactive, and yellow!
Wilhelm!
Jupiter stank. An arrow, swift rotating methane pulp. It hovered above us, so overpowering, we vomited all over Ganymede.
Mr. Mobius!
Saturn, we greeted with curses. What came after that is not worth mentioning. Uranus, Neptune, a glaze of grey-green ice. Over Pluto and trans-Pluto fell the last dirty jokes. For we had long since mistaken the sun for Sirius, Sirius for Canopus. Drifted off course, we drove into the deep toward a few white stars, which we never reached anyhow.
Wilhelm, my dear.
Long since mummified in our spacecraft, caked with filth. Three quarks for Master Mark. In our grinning skulls, no memory of the breathing Earth.
My dear little Johann Wilhelm.
Off with you to the Marianas.
Daddy.
Off with you! Beat it to the Marianas! Out with you! Out! Out!
Come, Mrs. Rose. Come,
Sprat!
Please.
A lot and of you, Mr. Rose. Forever to the he Pacific to Ocean. Out, that's all. There are plenty of islands there, and they all have their own stamps. Do something useful. Collect stamps. I never want to see you again. You have insulted King Solomon. May you be damned forever. May you and all the Marianas drown in the Mariana Deep, 6,000 fathoms down. May you rot in the darkest hole of the sea, forgotten by God and man.
You go in. Calm down. Thank you, Monica.
We're alone.
Monica.
Your family can no longer hear you.
Oh, of course. I was a little agitated.
Quite.
I had to speak the truth.
Obviously.
I got upset.
No, you didn't. You put on an act.
You see through me.
I've been taking care of you for 2 years.
Why should I admit anything to you?
I shouldn't worry about anything I would say. You are here, after all, as a madman.
And yet you don't believe I am one. You think I pretended to be mad on purpose.
Yes, I do. But I'd like to know why.
To take leave of my wife and sons forever. It was much the best for everyone.
In this horrible way?
In this humane way. If you're already in a madhouse, the best way to wipe out the past is to behave like a madman. My family can now forget me with a clear conscience. Imagine if I now presented myself as sane, all the complications it would cause.
You seem happy enough here, if you don't mind me saying so.
But you see, madness is expensive. For 15 years, my wife has been paying monstrous sums. I had to put a stop to it. The time was right. Solomon revealed to me what there was to be revealed. The system of all possible inventions has been completed. The last pages have been dictated, and my wife has found a new husband. A missionary, decent to his bones. You remind me of her. what I saw in the early days. You can relax now, nurse. Everything is all right.
You plan every action.
I'm a physicist.
Mr. Merbius?
Yes, nurse?
I have to talk to you.
Go ahead.
It's about the two of us.
Let's sit down.
We two must take leave of each other. Also forever.
You're leaving me?
I'm being transferred to the bankers and writers. Tomorrow the physicists are to be supervised by male nurses only.
Because of Newton and Einstein?
At the request of the district attorney. Dr. von Sant was afraid there would be trouble and gave in.
Monica, I am an awkward person. I have forgotten how to express my feelings. Talking shop with the two sick men I live with can hardly be called conversation. I'm afraid I've become mute inside as well. But I want you to know that for me, everything has changed since I've known you. It's more bearable. Well, now that time is over too. For 2 years I was a little happier than usual, because through you, Monica, I found the courage to accept my isolation, my fate as a madman. Farewell.
Mr. Merbius, I don't believe you're a madman.
Neither do I. But that doesn't change my position in any way. It's my bad luck that King Solomon keeps appearing to me. The fact is, there is nothing more scandalous than a miracle in the realm of science.
Mr. Merbius, I believe in this miracle.
You believe?
In King Solomon.
That he appears to me?
That he appears to you.
Every day, every night?
Every day, every night.
That he dictates the secrets of nature to me?
I believe it all. And if you told me that King David also appeared to you with all his retinue, I would believe it.
The interconnectedness of all things. The system of all possible inventions. What of those?
I simply know that you're not sick. I feel it.
Monica, leave now.
I'm staying.
I never want to see you again.
You need me. You have no one else in this world, not a soul.
It is fatal to believe in King Solomon.
I love you.
You're headed for disaster.
I'm not afraid for myself. I'm afraid for you. Newton and Einstein are dangerous.
I get along with them.
Dorothea and Irina got along with them too. Look what happened to them.
Monica, you have confessed your faith and your love to me. You're forcing me to tell you the truth as well. I, too, love you, Monica. More than my life means to me. And that is why you are in danger, because we love each other.
I wake up again.
Now, Professor.
Suddenly remember.
Come now, Professor.
I strangled her in.
Forget about it, Professor.
Will I ever be able to play the violin again?
You were playing just a while ago.
Oh, reasonably well.
The Kreutzer Sonata, while the police were here.
Ah, oh, the Kreutzer Sonata. Thank God. And yet I don't like playing the violin. And I don't like this pipe either. It tastes awful.
So give it up.
I can't do that. I'm Albert Einstein. Are you two in love?
We're in love.
When you're courting a nice girl, an hour seems like a second. When you sit on a red-hot cinder, a second seems like an eternity. That's relativity. But only an equation is forever. Irina and I were also in love. I warned her, I yelled at her, I treated her like a dog, I begged her to run away. In vain, she stayed. She wanted to move to the country with me, to Kolwabal. She wanted to marry me. She had even obtained permission for the wedding from Dr. von Sant. Then I strangled her. Poor Irina. There is nothing more absurd on the face of the earth than a woman's frantic urge to sacrifice themselves. All that is left is her chalk outline on the floor. Look how dreadfully scuffed it is already.
Go and lie down again, Professor.
You may call me Albert.
Be sensible, Albert.
You'll be sensible yourself, Monica. Listen to the man you love and flee from him. Otherwise, you're lost. I'm going back to sleep.
Poor deluded man.
He should have finally convinced you of the impossibility of loving me.
You are not insane.
It would be more rational if you thought I was. Escape! Get lost! Beat it! Or I'll treat you like a dog myself.
Why don't you treat me like a lover?
Come here, Monica. Listen. I made a serious mistake. I revealed my secret. I didn't keep King Solomon's visits to myself. He's making me suffer for it. For the rest of my life. That's all right. But you shouldn't be punished for that as well. In the eyes of the world, you are in love with a lunatic. It can only have tragic consequences.
Do you want me?
Why do you talk like that?
Well, I want to sleep with you. I want to have children with you. I know I sound shameless. Why don't you look at me? Do you find me unattractive? I know this outfit is hideous. I hate my profession. For years I've been tending to the sick in the name of charity. I never flinched. I was there for everyone. I sacrificed myself. But now I want to sacrifice myself for one person alone. To be there for one person alone, not always for others. I want to be there for the man I love. For you. I will do anything you ask of me. I'll work for you day and night. Just don't send me away. I don't have anyone in the world except you either. I'm alone too.
Monica, I have to send you away.
Don't you love me at all?
I do love you, Monica. My God, I love you. But it's the least rational thing here. Listen, come out here on the terrace. Let's go down to the lake. It's so pretty down there.
Then why do you deny me? And not only me. You claim that King Solomon appears to you. Why do you deny him too?
Monica, you can believe anything about me. Call me a weakling. That's your right. I am unworthy of your love. But I have remained faithful to King Solomon. He burst into my life suddenly, unbidden. He abused me. He destroyed my life. But I did not deny him.
Are you sure?
You doubt it?
You think you have to atone because you didn't keep his appearances secret. But maybe you're atoning because you don't make his revelation known to the world.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Well, he dictates to you the system of all possible inventions. Are you fighting for its recognition?
But I'm supposed to be insane.
Why so little courage?
In my case, courage is a crime.
Johann Wilhelm, I talked to Dr. von Sant.
You talked?
You are free.
Free?
We can get married.
My God.
Dr. von Sant has already made all the arrangements. She still considers you a sick man, but not dangerous, and not genetically defective. She said she was crazier than you are and laughed.
That's nice of her.
Oh, well, isn't she a wonderful human being?
Absolutely.
Johann Wilhelm, I've accepted a post as district nurse in Blumenstein. I've been saving. We have nothing to worry about. All we need to do is love each other. Isn't that wonderful?
Absolutely.
You don't sound very happy.
It's also unexpected.
I've done even more.
What would that be?
I spoke to the famous physicist, Professor Scherbelt.
He was my teacher.
He remembered you perfectly. He said you were his best student.
And what did you discuss with him?
He promised he would examine your manuscripts with an open mind.
Did you make it clear that they come from King Solomon?
Of course.
And?
He laughed. He said you always had a wild sense of humour. Johann Wilhelm, we mustn't only think of ourselves. You have been chosen. King Solomon has appeared to you, revealed himself in all his glory. You have partaken of the wisdom of heaven. Now you must walk the path ordained by that miracle and stay on that path, even if it leads through mockery and laughter, through disbelief and doubt. But that way leads out of this asylum. Johann Wilhelm, it leads to public recognition, not to solitude. It leads into battle. I am there to help you, to fight by your side. The heavens that sent you, King Solomon, sent me too. Dearest.
Oh, my love.
Aren't you happy?
Very.
Now we must go and unpack your bags. The train is leaving at 8:20 to Blumenstein.
There isn't much, hardly anything.
Oh, you have tears in your eyes.
You too.
Tears of happiness.
I strangled Monica Stettler down at the lake.
Einstein's at it again. Kreisler, Schönhausmann.
Cognac?
Chin chin.
Like as the waves make towards the pebbled shore, so do our minutes hasten to their end. Each changing place with that which goes before, in sequent toil all forwards do contend. Nativity, once in the mane of light, crawls to maturity, wherewith being crowned, crooked eclipses gainst his glory fight, and time that gave doth now his gift confound. Time doth transfix the flourish set on youth, and delves the parallels in beauty's brow, feeds on the rarities of nature's truth, and nothing stands but for his scythe to mow. And yet to times in hope my verse shall stand, praising thy worth despite his cruel hand.
Camera, Doctor.
Yes.
Strangled again, Doctor.
No doubt about it. Once again, with tremendous force. This time with a curtain cord.
Just like 3 months ago.
But look at the unusual knot the murderer has tied. The cord has a single twist in it.
A clue?
This is a case where clues are superfluous. We have perfect starting conditions. The rest is inevitable.
It's so pretty down here.
A Havana, Inspector.
No, thanks.
Perhaps a schnapps, then.
Later, perhaps. Oh, that cat of yours never moves. If it didn't meow, I wouldn't know if it were alive or dead.
Or both at the same time.
Now then, enough riddles. What was the nurse's name?
Monica Stettler.
Age?
25, from Blumenstein.
Relatives?
None. Would you like to have the murderer...
Please, Doctor.
I mean, the perpetrator brought in. Mm.
Oh, I wouldn't think of it.
But last...
Dr. Van Zandt, I do my duty. I take down evidence, I examine the corpse, I have it photographed and submitted to a forensic examination, but I will not examine Möbius. I leave him to you. For good, along with the other radioactive physicists.
Oh, it's hot in here.
Not at all.
But it's the third murder.
Please, Doctor.
This third accident is all I needed in Les Cerisiers. I might as well resign. Monica Stettler was my best nurse. She understood the mental patients. She had empathy. I loved her like a daughter. But her death is not the worst of it. My reputation as a doctor is ruined.
I'm sure it will come back.
Dinner is served for the patients.
Who is that specimen?
Uwe Sievers, former European heavyweight boxing champion, now head nurse.
And those two other monsters?
Murillo, South American champion, also heavyweight, and MacArthur, North American champion, middleweight. The mice in China, MacArthur. You see, we take the situation seriously. Such gentleness, despite his gigantic paws. The silver, Maria.
Lovely. And what are the dear patients having for dinner?
Poulet à la broche, cordon bleu.
Fantastic.
Only the best.
I'm a 14th class civil servant. Basic home cooking, that's what I'm used to.
The patients will help themselves.
They are really something.
Satisfied?
If we had them in the police force...
Their wages are astronomical.
With your millionaire lunatic politicians and aristocracy here, you can afford it. No one's going to slip through their fingers.
The Kreutzer.
The Andante.
Well finished, Inspector.
Wheel the body out, as usual.
Monica, my love.
Mobius, how could you? You have killed my best nurse, my gentlest nurse, my sweetest nurse.
I'm sorry, Dr. von Sant.
Sorry.
King Solomon commanded me to do it.
King Solomon? I suppose His Majesty gave the orders for the murder.
I was standing by the window, gazing into the darkening dusk. Then the king came floating up the park, over the terrace, right up to me, very close, and whispered his order through the window pane.
No! Excuse me, Inspector, my nerves.
That's quite all right.
A place like this can really wear you out.
I can imagine.
I'm going to withdraw now. Inspector Voss, please convey to the district attorney my profound regret for the incidents in my sanatorium. Please assure him that everything is in control again. Doctor, gentlemen, it was an honor.
All right. Now you can finally take her to the chapel. Lay her next to the other nurse.
Monica. My beloved Monica.
No, I really have to have a Havana. I've earned it. Quite something. My dear Mobius, hidden away behind the fire screen, you'll find Sir Isaac Newton's cognac.
Gladly, Inspector. May I pour you a glass?
You may.
Another one?
Another one.
Inspector, I must ask you to arrest me.
Whatever for, my dear Mobius?
Well, on account of that nurse, Monica.
According to your own confession, you're acting on orders from King Solomon. As long as I'm unable to arrest him, you're a free man.
Still?
Still nothing. Pour me another one.
All right, Inspector.
But now, put the bottle away, otherwise those male nurses will polish it off.
Yes, sir.
Sit down.
Yes, sir.
You see, every year in this small town and the surrounding district, I arrest a few criminals. Not many, barely half a dozen. Some of them I arrest with pleasure, others I feel sorry for. But I have to arrest them regardless. Justice is justice. And now you come along, you and your two colleagues. At first, I was angry, because my hands were tired. But now, well, suddenly I'm enjoying it. I could shout with joy. I've found three murderers whom I can leave scot-free. And I can do that with a good conscience. For the first time, justice is on holiday, which is a tremendous feeling. Serving justice is a terrific strain, my friend. Wears you out physically and morally. I simply need a break. And it's to you, my good fellow, that I owe this pleasure. Goodbye. Give my kind regards to Newton and Einstein and my respects to King Solomon.
What's for dinner?
Poulet à la boche, cordon bleu. That's strange. Usually we have a lighter dinner.
No appetite?
I understand. After my nurse, I lost my appetite too. Stay.
Yes, Isaac?
There's something I have to discuss with you, Möbius.
Yes?
My dear Möbius, we are no longer in the care of female nurses. We are being guarded by male nurses. Huge, brawny fellows.
Makes no difference to me.
Maybe not to you, Möbius. You obviously prefer to spend your whole life in a madhouse. But to me it makes a difference. Because I want out.
That's your business.
Not entirely. Here's a confession, Möbius. I'm not crazy.
Of course not, Sir Isaac.
I am not Sir Isaac Newton.
I know. You're Albert Einstein.
Nonsense. Nor am I the Herbert Jorg Beutler I'm presumed to be around here. My real name is Kilton, my friend.
Alec Jasper Kilton?
Correct.
The creator of the theory of equivalence?
Precisely.
You snuck in here?
By pretending to be mad.
In order to spy on me?
As for my impeccable German, I learned it in our Secret Service training camp. Gott im Himmel! Ah, horrendous drudgery.
And because that poor nurse, Dorothea, stumbled on the truth, you...
Yes, yes, I greatly regret the incident.
I understand.
Orders are orders.
Obviously.
I couldn't have acted in any other way.
Of course not.
My mission was at stake. And the most secret product of our Secret Service. I had to kill her. That is, if I wanted to avoid suspicion. Nurse Dorothea no longer thought I was crazy. And the head psychiatrist thought I was just moderately ill. To prove my insanity, once and for all, a murder was necessary. Yes, Poulet à la Broche really is superb.
Einstein's fiddling again.
Bach gavotte.
His meal's getting cold.
Oh, forget about that nut. Let him fiddle.
Is this a threat?
You are a person I respect. I would regret having to take serious action against you.
You have an assignment to kidnap me.
If our Secret Service proves to be justified in its suspicion.
Which is?
That you happen to be the most brilliant physicist of our time.
Kilton, I am a man with a serious nervous disorder, and that's it.
We have a different opinion.
And what do you think of me?
I consider you the greatest physicist of all time. Full stop.
And how did your Secret Service get on my trail?
By chance. I read your dissertation on the foundations of a new physics. At first, I thought it was some kind of whimsy. And the scales fell from my eyes. And I realized what I must do.
You were not the only one who read that dissertation, Kilton. Frankly, I'm not crazy either. May I introduce myself? I, too, am a physicist and a member of a secret service, but a somewhat different one. My name is Josef Eisler.
The discoverer of the Eisler effect?
Precisely.
Disappeared in 1950.
Voluntarily.
Put your hands up, Eisler, up! Would you mind standing with your face against the wall?
But, of course. My dear Kilton, I will gladly put away my Browning if you will do the same with your coat.
Very well.
You've messed up my plans, Kilton. I thought you really were insane.
If it's any comfort. I thought the same of you.
All sorts of things went wrong. That business with Irena. She was getting suspicious and thus signed her own death warrant. I deeply regret the whole incident.
I understand.
Orders are orders.
Obviously.
I couldn't have acted in any other way.
Of course not.
My mission was at stake, just like yours. the most secret project of our secret servers. Shall we sit?
Isla, I presume that you too want to force me...
Ah, now, Mobius.
Induce me to visit your country.
Burgundy, Mobius?
Please.
I'm going to attack the cordon bleu.
Don't hold back.
Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Six o'clock. Down come the bars.
Beasts.
They've got bruisers lurking in the park. I've been watching them from my window for some time.
Prisoners. We'll never get out of this madhouse now unless we coordinate our actions.
But I don't want to escape.
Mervius.
I don't see the slightest reason why I should. On the contrary, I'm satisfied with my fate.
But I am not satisfied with it. A fairly crucial detail, wouldn't you say? With all due respect to your personal feelings, you are a genius, and as such, common property. You've opened up new horizons in physics. But you don't hold a patent on science. It is your duty to open the doors to us as well, the non-geniuses. Come with me, and within a year, we'll encase you in a tuxedo, whisk you to Stockholm, and you will accept, modestly, your Nobel Prize.
Your secret service is strangely altruistic.
I'll tell you frankly, Mobius, what impresses them most is the possibility that you may have solved the problem of gravity.
It's true.
You say that so calmly.
How else should I say it?
My secret service believed that you might discover the unified theory of elementary particles.
Then I can set their minds at ease, too. The unified field theory has been solved.
And the system of all possible inventions, Mobius.
That exists, too. I constructed it out of curiosity as a practical companion piece to my theoretical works. Should I feign innocence? Thought has consequences. It was my duty to study the effects that my field theory and my theory of gravitation would produce. The result is devastating. New, inconceivable forces would be unleashed, enabling a technology that would dwarf all imagination if my work were to fall into the hands of the human race.
That can hardly be prevented.
The only question is who gets hold of it first.
You would like your secret service to reap these benefits, wouldn't you, Kilton, and the general staff behind it?
Why shouldn't I? Any general staff that finds a way to reintroduce the greatest physicist of all time to the scientific community is sacred to me.
Only my own general staff is sacred. We provide the human race with enormous resources of power. That gives us the right to impose conditions. We must decide in whose favor we will apply our science, and I have made my decision.
Nonsense, Eisler. The issue is freedom to pursue the cause of our science. That's all. Our job is to pioneer new developments, nothing else. Whether humanity knows how to follow the path we have prepared for it is humanity's business, not ours.
You're a miserable aesthete, Kilton. If all you're concerned with is the freedom of science, why don't you join us? We too have stopped imposing party lines on our physicists. We can't afford to. We need results, just as you do. Our political system eats from the hand of science, exactly like yours.
Both our political systems, Eisler, must now eat out of Mobius's hand.
On the contrary, he will have to obey us. We finally have him in check.
Really? I think we have each other in check. Mm. Unfortunately, our secret services both came up with the same idea. If Mobius goes with you, I can do nothing about it, because you would stop me. And you would be helpless if Mobius decided in my favour. The choice is his, not ours.
Let's get the guns.
Let's fight it out.
I regret that this affair is coming to a bloody conclusion. But we must shoot. At each other, and certainly at our attendants. If necessary, even at Mobius. He may be the most important man in the world, but his manuscripts are more important.
My manuscripts? I burned them.
What?
A little while ago, before the police came back, as a precaution.
burned.
15 years of work!
Oh, I'm going to lose my mind.
Officially, we've already done that.
That means we're completely at your mercy.
And for this, I had to strangle a nurse and learn German.
I had to learn to play the violin. Absolute torture for a person who has no ear for music. Shall we go on with dinner?
Oh, I've lost my appetite.
We are three physicists. The decision we have to make is a decision among physicists. We must proceed scientifically. We must not allow ourselves to be swayed by opinions, but only by logical conclusions. The fundamental premises are clear. All three of us have a single aim in view, but our tactics differ. That aim is the future of physics. You, Kilton, want to preserve the freedom of science and argue that it has no responsibility. On the other hand, you, Eisler, make physics answerable in the name of responsibility to the power politics of a particular country. Now, what is the actual state of affairs? I need to know that if I am to make a decision.
Some of the most famous physicists are awaiting you. Remuneration and lodging are ideal. The climate is murderous, but the air conditioning is excellent.
Are these physicists free?
My dear Merbius, our physicists have declared their willingness to solve scientific problems which are indispensable for our national defence. You have to understand that...
So they're not free, in fact. Josef Eisler, you are engaged in power politics. That requires power. Do you have power?
You misunderstand me, Merbius. My power politics consists precisely in the fact that I have renounced my own power in favour of a party.
Are you able to steer your party in accord with your sense of responsibility, or is there a danger of your being steered by your party?
Merbius, that is ridiculous. Naturally, I can only hope that the party will follow my recommendations, nothing more. Without hope, it is impossible to hold any political position.
Are your physicists free, at least?
Well, to the extent that they too have to serve the national defence.
Remarkable. Each of you is praising a different theory, but the actual conditions you have to offer are the same. A prison in either case. I prefer the madhouse. Here, at least, I can't be exploited by politicians.
Well, certain risks do have to be taken.
There are risks that must never be taken. The destruction of the human race is one of them. We know what the world is doing with the weapons it already has, and we can imagine what it would do with those that my research would make possible. This realization has determined all my actions.
You have given this great thought.
I have. I was poor. I had a wife and three children. The university held out fame. Industry beckoned with money. Both courses were too dangerous. I would have had to publish my work, and the result would have been the overthrow of our system of knowledge and complete economic collapse. A sense of responsibility compelled me to take a different course. I dropped my academic career, turned my back on the industrial world, and abandoned my family to its fate. I put on the fool's cap. I pretended that King Solomon came to visit me and was promptly locked up in a madhouse.
But that was no solution.
Reason demanded this step. In our study of science, we have run up against the limits of what is knowable. We have formulated a few precisely definable laws, a few fundamental links between incomprehensible phenomena, that's all. The rest remains a mystery that baffles our understanding. We've come to the end of the road. But humanity hasn't caught up yet. We struggled onward and forward, but no one is following us. We've advanced into nothingness. Our science has become a horror. Our research, dangerous. Our knowledge, lethal. All that is left for us physicists is to capitulate before reality. But reality is no match for us. It comes to grief at our hands. We must take back our knowledge, and I have taken it back. There is no other solution, and that goes for you too.
What are you implying?
You have secret radio transmitters, am I right?
What of it?
Inform your superiors that you are mistaken, that I really am mad.
Then we'll be stuck here for the rest of our lives.
Quite probably.
Well, nobody gives a damn about a failed spy.
Exactly.
So...
You have to stay here in the madhouse with me.
We?
Both of you. We three, together.
Merbius, you can't expect us to... for the rest of our lives.
It's my only chance of remaining incognito. Only in the madhouse can we still be free. Only in the madhouse can we still afford to think. Outside, at liberty, our ideas are pure dynamite.
But look, we're not crazy.
But we are murderers.
I resent that.
You shouldn't have said that, Merbius.
Anyone who kills is a murderer. And we have killed. Each of us came to this institution on a mission. Each of us killed his nurse for a definite purpose. You two did it so as not to endanger your secret mission, and I did it because Monica believed in me. She considered me an unrecognized genius. She didn't realize that today it is the duty of a genius to remain unrecognized. Killing is a horrible thing. I killed to prevent an even more horrible catastrophe. Now you've come along. I can't do away with you, but maybe I can persuade you. Shall our murders become meaningless? Either we performed a sacrifice, or it was murder. Either we remain in the madhouse, or the world becomes a madhouse. Either we eliminate ourselves from the memory of mankind, or mankind eliminates itself.
Merbius!
Yes, Kilton?
This nut house. These horrible attendants. This hunchback doctor.
Yes?
We're caged in like wild beasts.
Don't be so dramatic. We are wild beasts. We should not be let loose on humanity. We deserve each other.
Is there really no other solution?
None.
Johann Wilhelm Merbius, I'm a decent human being. I'm staying.
I'm staying too. For good.
Thank you. Thank you for giving the world a small chance of survival. To our nurses.
I drink to Dorothea Moser.
To Dorothea.
To Dorothea.
Dorothea, I had to sacrifice you. I requited your love with death. Now, I want to prove myself worthy of you.
I drink to Irena Straub.
To Irena.
To Irena.
Irena, I had to sacrifice you. In your honor and in praise of your devotion, I will act rationally.
I drink to Monica Stettler.
To Monica.
Monica, I had to sacrifice you. May your love bless the friendship that we three physicists have formed in your name. Give us the strength to faithfully keep the secrets of our science in our guise as fools.
A perfection of means and confusion of goals.
Let us turn ourselves back into madmen. Let Newton haunt these rooms again.
Let us fiddle away at Chrysler and Beethoven.
Let Solomon's spirit appear to us again.
Mad, but wise.
Imprisoned, but free.
Physicists, but innocent.
Bring in the three patients, Sievers.
Mysterious night.
infinite and sublime. Glittering through the bars of my window, Jupiter and Saturn.
A blissful night, consoling and good. The riddles are silent, the questions are mute. I want to play my violin forever.
A solemn night, deep blue and holy. The night of the mighty king. His white shadow detaches itself from the wall. His eyes are shining.
Mobius, on the orders of the district attorney, I may speak to you only in the presence of a guard.
I understand, Dr. von Zandt.
But what I have to tell you also applies to your colleagues, Alec Jasper Kilton and Joseph Eisler.
You know.
Gentlemen, your conversation has been monitored for years. Bring in Kilton's and Eisler's secret transmitters.
How droll.
We shall call the inspector and tell him everything.
Him? Ha! And how are you going to tell him? With this? The searchlight, Seavers! This villa is surrounded by guards. Any attempt to escape is hopeless. Guards, out! You alone shall learn my secret, because it doesn't matter any longer whether you know it or not. I, too, have received visitations from Solomon, the Golden King.
Solomon?
All these years. The first time was in my study, on a summer evening. Outside, the sun was still shining, and a woodpecker was hammering in the park, when suddenly the Golden King came floating toward me like a tremendous angel. His gaze rested upon me. His lips opened. He began to speak to his handmaiden. He had risen from the dead. He intended to reclaim the power that was once his here below. He had revealed his wisdom so that Mobius would reign on Earth in his name.
She has to be locked up. She belongs in an asylum.
But Mobius betrayed him. He tried to conceal what could not be concealed, for what was revealed to him was no secret, because it is thinkable. What is thinkable will someday be thought, now or in the future. What Solomon had discovered could be discovered by someone else. But it was to remain the deed of the Golden King, the means toward the establishment of his holy dominion. And so he sought me out, his unworthy handmaiden.
Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
The Golden King commanded me to depose Mobius and rule in his place. I obeyed. I was a doctor, and Mobius was my patient. I could do with him as I wished. I sedated him for years, again and again, and made photocopies of the Golden King's writings down to the last page.
Don't you understand?
I went about it cautiously. At first, I exploited only two or three discoveries to bring in the necessary capital. Then I founded huge industrial plants, bought one factory after another, and established a powerful cartel. Gentlemen, I will make full use of the system of all possible inventions.
Dr. Matilda von Zandt, you are sick. Solomon does not exist. He never appeared to me.
You are lying.
I just invented him in order to keep my discoveries secret.
You are denying him.
Listen to reason. Acknowledge that you are insane.
No more than you are.
Then I will have to shout the truth to the world. You have exploited me all these years, shamelessly. You even let my poor wife pay for me.
You are powerless, Mobius. Even if your voice were to penetrate these walls, the world would not believe you. Because to the public at large, you are nothing but a dangerous lunatic because of the murder you committed.
Monica?
Irene?
Dorothea?
I simply made use of an opportunity. The wisdom of Solomon had to be safeguarded, and your treachery punished. I had to render the three of you harmless.
through your murders. I incited those three nurses against you. I could count on you to act as you did. You were as predictable as robots, and you killed like professional hitmen. There is no point in attacking me, Mobius. Just as there was no point in burning manuscripts I had already copied. What you see around you are no longer the walls of a mental institution. This house is the treasury of my cartel. It encloses three physicists, the only human beings apart from myself who know the truth. What holds you in check are not psychiatric attendants. Sievers is the head of my industrial police. You have fled into a prison of your own making. Solomon thought through you, acted through you, and now he is destroying you through me. But I am assuming his power. I am not afraid. My institution is full of mad relatives, all of them bedecked with jewels and medals. I am the last normal person in my family. The end product. Barren, suitable only for the love of my neighbour. But Solomon took pity on me. He who has 1,000 wives chose me. Now, I will be more powerful than my forefathers. My cartel will rule, will conquer nations and continents, exploit the solar system, send spaceships to Andromeda. The experiment has been a success. Not for the world, but for a hunchbacked old maid. Let's go, Sivas. The board of directors is waiting. My global enterprise is underway. The wheels of production are rolling.
The world has fallen into the hands of an insane psychiatrist.
Whatever has once been thought can never be taken back.
I am Newton, Sir Isaac Newton. Born January 4th, 1643 at Woolsthorpe near Grantham. I am president of the Royal Society. But there's no need to rise on my account. I wrote the mathematical principles of natural philosophy. I said, hypotheses non fingo. In the fields of experimental optics, theoretical mechanics and higher mathematics, my achievements are not insignificant. But the question of the nature of gravity I had to leave unresolved. I also wrote theological books, commentaries on the prophet Daniel and on the revelation of St. John the Divine. I am Newton. Sir Isaac Newton. I am president of the Royal Society.
I am Einstein, Professor Albert Einstein, born March the 14th, 1879, in Ulm. In 1902, I secured a position as an examiner in the Federal Patent Office in Bern. There, I worked out my special theory of relativity, which transformed the nature of physics. Then I became a member of the Prussian Academy of Sciences. Later, I became a refugee because I am a Jew. It was I who developed the formula E equals MC squared, the key to the transformation of matter into energy. I love humanity, and I love my violin, but it was on my recommendation that the atom bomb was built. I'm Einstein, Professor Albert Einstein, born March 14th, 1879, in Ulm.
I am Solomon. I am poor King Solomon. I was once immeasurably rich, wise and God-fearing. My power caused the mighty to tremble. I was a prince of peace and justice. But my wisdom destroyed my fear of God. And when I no longer feared God, my wisdom destroyed my wealth. Now the cities I ruled are dead. The kingdom entrusted to me has become an empty, blue, shimmering desert. And somewhere around a small, yellow, nameless star, there circles, pointlessly, constantly, the radioactive Earth. I am Solomon. I am Solomon. I am poor King Solomon.
In tonight's drama on Three, The Physicists by Friedrich Dürrenmatt, you had an adaptation for radio by Matt Thompson, first broadcast in 2013, with Samantha Bond as Dr. Van Zandt, John Hodgkinson as Möbius, and Jeffrey Whitehead as the police inspector. Newton was played by Tom Tuck, Einstein by John Bett, Nurse Monica and Mrs. Rose by Madeline Worrell, the head nurse by Yoni Fraser, Mr. Rose, Andrew Watson. The boys were Sebastian Koch, Alec Thompson and Angus Nelson. The recorders were played by Susan Fuchs, Oscar Gormley and Rebecca Blair of the Edinburgh Music School. And the music soundtrack was from Bernard Herrmann's score to the film Fahrenheit 451. Sound design and direction were by Matt Thompson. The Physicists was produced in North Berwick in Scotland by Rocket House Productions and first broadcast on BBC Radio 3 in 2013. And our apologies for our overrun because of our earlier live prom from the Royal Albert Hall through the night. Tonight is presented by Katrina Young and we join it now in the middle of the first piece of music. Apologies for that. This is a concert of music by Marc-Antoine Charpentier. His Motet pour les Trépassés, Sébastien Dorset conducts Ensemble Correspondance.